Mario Chino back with us on Coast to Coast. We're going to be talking about past lives, the psychic realm. I'm looking forward to this. I hope you are too. So get ready. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you. It's great to have Mario Chino back with us, world-renowned psychic intuitive medium. She's taking her next spiritual journey, hosting live mobile appcasts titled Mario Chino's Angels on Call. And she'll provide intuitive life direction and guidance on relationships, health, family, financial concerns. She also defines herself as a soul surfer, a term that she uses as she surfs from one past lifetime to another while giving past life readings as well. Mary, great to have you back. How are you?
Oh, George, it's great to hear your voice. I love your show and listen all the time, and I'm great, and it's great to hear you.
You're up there on the East Coast these days, huh?
I'm in Florida. Right now, I'm all over the place.
Not bad. You like Florida?
No.
You don't? Why not?
I don't dislike it. Listen, I'm grateful to be alive.
There are no hurricanes right now, so you should be loving it, basking in the sun, right?
No, I'm not a basker.
You're not a basker, huh?
Not a basker.
Never have been?
Never.
Well, now tell us about Mary for brand new listeners. You haven't been on with me in a long time.
I know. I've missed you.
Where have you been?
Where have you been?
Well, you got my producer's phone number. You call him up whenever you want to come on.
Well, I'm going to be doing that.
You got a blank check.
You have wonderful people working with you.
Oh, what a great staff. They've been with me for going on 16 years, Mary.
Wow.
No changes. 16
wonderful,
years.
Wonderful people.
They sure have. How did you get started as a psychic intuitive medium?
Well, I was like this from birth, but not to the public. In the family, I guess, in my family, everybody was known as, you know, like a strega. In Italian, you say strega, it means witch, but it doesn't really
strega.
Mean that. Strega. Like, strega. There's a children's book called Nonna Strega, and it doesn't mean really witch. It means a wise person before your years.
Right.
And I came from a whole family of that. My grandmother, my mother, I had five aunts, but I was this little kid who saw things and kept everything to herself because it was too freaky. Now, I wasn't afraid, but I didn't know how to say it. I didn't know how to explain it to people that I didn't believe in. I don't know why people were crying when somebody died in the family.
Because you saw them. They were still around for you.
They were still around, and I didn't feel like there was death. I never felt about death. And I would feel certain things about people, emotions. I knew if I liked or didn't like a person immediately from a baby. And I like most people, but there are certain people that they may have been going through something that day that I normally would go to as a child, like as an infant, like put my hands out to and they'd hug me or whatever. And I would just tell my mother, no. Because I was talking, she said, my mother from about 8 months old.
You used to talk to the dead?
Yes.
Did anybody else see them in your family or just
my
you?
My mother.
Oh, she did. She had
my
that ability.
Was petrified. Petrified.
But you weren't?
No. Because I used to tell my mother told me from a little child. And my mother passed about a year and a half ago.
Oh, sorry.
And from the non-physical world. God bless her at 93 years old.
She's listening to you now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I know what she's saying. She says, you talk for both of us, because she was a fraidy cat, and that's what my father called her all the time, because she was petrified. She used to say to me, as a kid, when I told her what I was seeing, she goes, I know, I see you too. And she says, but tell them to go away. They ask God to take it away. She said, Mary, this is not a gift. This is a curse.
She thought it was evil, didn't she?
Yeah. No, she was afraid of it. She was petrified. And it wasn't, not that it was evil, because it was scared her. It scared her because she didn't want to see dead people. She used to say, go to heaven, stay there, and then don't talk to me.
Why didn't it scare you?
Because I would communicate back. Because if you're afraid, you're going to bring fear into yourself, and you're going to see scary things about, you're not going to see them for who they are.
Well, that's a good point.
Her own fear in life. Made her fearful.
Well, to this day, have you ever been scared of these entities?
Never.
Have they never tried to do anything bad or harm you?
Yeah, they have.
Oh, they have. All right.
They have. But not very rarely. There was one experience, and I wrote about it, in my first book, and it really was that it was so deep and so real that it traveled 70 miles. My oldest boys for the weekend on Long Island. I was living in Brooklyn, as you can tell from this accent.
You've got that. As a matter of fact, you sound like you starred in the Goodfellas movie.
Yeah. and in fact, I knew a lot of the people who were in the movie on the show from radio.
That was a great movie, by the way.
Yeah. And
but you had this ability, you know, from wherever you are, and to this day, do you have like a spirit helper?
You know, people, I ask that question for so many years because I read every book I can get my hands on throughout life about, you know.
Because nobody taught you. You had to learn this yourself, right?
My mother would teach, explain to me, like, all right, you pray. Pray that they go away. It wasn't always like pray, but she knew that it wasn't just mediumship. My mother was an intuitive. People would come to her. She was the oldest of seven, and all her family, all her nieces and nephews, everybody would come to my mother, not for readings. It was just like, go to Aunt Anna.
Where did your mother get the gift?
My grandmother.
Okay, and she got it from her mother, probably.
From her mother, probably.
All right.
But my grandmother was completely different from my mother. My grandmother wasn't afraid of anything. My mother, like I said,
you take after your grandmother.
Oh, yeah, I'm my grandmother's, yes, and my father. But more my grandmother, Rosie, and my name is Mary Rose. And my grandmother was Italian, but she was born in Brooklyn. So she was really not, with an accent or anything else. She spoke like I do. And very, very intuitive. You couldn't lie to my grandmother. You couldn't. If you walk in a room with my grandmother, and let's say you forgot to get milk at the store, and she didn't even know you were going to get milk, she used to say, "Didn't you forget something?"
She knew.
She knew. She would just know.
Yeah.
She would just know anything and everything. It was like crazy. But we, in our family, we thought that was normal. That I thought, because we didn't really have friends. Not that we weren't allowed. There were so many. I have 31 first cousins, just on my mother's side.
Big family.
Yes. So my mother used to say, where do we get room to have your friends over? I got my family here all the time. So we just thought that everybody was like us. We didn't think we were exceptional in any way. And my mother, she could tell things. And here's one thing that scared my father. He was going to go with my younger brother for a ride in the car. He had bought a new Cadillac.
Okay.
And my mother says, no, you're not taking him. He was only two. And he goes, why? Because that was a great thing to do, father and son experience.
Of course.
No, don't take him. Don't go with him, Mike. Not today. He said, and then my brother Michael was crying. I want to go. My mother says, you're not taking him. He's staying here.
He was 2 years old.
My father didn't drink or anything else like that. There was nothing that would keep her from that. And then we had a house full of people, and my brother's crying. And so my father goes, all right, let's stay home. And within, I would say, 35, 40 minutes, this is before cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
This is like in the late 60s. My father calls from the police station.
From the police station?
From the police, because there was no cell phones. He was in a five-car accident.
Ugh.
His car was the third car and was totaled.
Oh, and he was okay, I trust.
My father was fine, but the seat that my brother would be sitting in, this is before the kids had it in the back.
Crushed, bro.
And there were car seats or anything else, was completely destroyed.
Little kid would have been killed.
He would have been dead.
Yeah.
And he called my mother, he says, I will never, and my father's a longshoreman.
Because in those days, too, they probably didn't seatbelt people. Or
no,
anything.
They didn't have seatbelts.
Little guy would have gone flying.
They didn't have seatbelts.
Ugh.
He said to my mother, now my father was known as Mikey the Bull. He was a longshoreman.
Mikey the Bull?
Mikey the Bull, yes. He was only 5'7". He was French and Italian. 5'7", with a 52-inch chest and a 36-inch waist.
Did he know Tommy two times?
No, my father worked for a living.
All right.
but he had that kind of, like Edward G. Robinson. That's
yeah.
What he looked like. Especially when he spoke French. But he had called my mother, and he said, I will never, ever disregard what you say again.
Never doubt her again.
Never. He says, and he came home and he kissed my brother. And he says, thank God for your mother. Thank God for your mother. I will never. My mother, and it was his first time driving the car, the new car.
It's gone, totaled.
Totaled, jeez. Completely.
What did he buy afterward? What did he get?
A Caprice Classic.
Yeah.
I remember it like yesterday. And things like that, where my mother would see things like more accidents than good things. And I used to say, that's because you're looking for the fear.
Well, did she try to prohibit you from doing this, or did she try to talk you out of it?
Well, she never wanted me to do this.
Ever?
Never. I had regular jobs.
I mean, yeah, but she had the gift, so
she kept it to herself. It was kept only to the family. Only in the family.
And you were a little more vocal about it.
Oh, I was like a mutant until I was 14 years old.
Did you do this in school, too?
No. I went to parochial school. And
they would have thought you were doing the work of the devil.
Problem. Not really. You know, I did have one nun, Sister Mary Marjorie, in the eighth grade, who I was like my mentor. And I was a very quiet, believe it or not, I was a very, very quiet child. And until I was about 15 years old. And then everything changed.
Yeah.
And I said to her once, because I wanted to be a nun. And my father had said, you're not going. He pulled me by the ear out of the convent. And he goes, get home. I have one daughter. You're not going to be a nun. And so I talked to Sister Mary Marjorie, and I said to her, you know, we pray. We go to church in the morning and before school. And then I used to go to church because I wanted to at 3 o'clock just to say the rosary. And I said, you know, we're supposed to be praying and to Our Lady or God or Christ, but we're not supposed to get answers. And she said, what do you mean? I said, because sometimes when I pray, I hear things. I said, she goes, well, is your conscience can make you feel. I said, no, I hear things. I hear voices. And I said, I'm not telling you, I don't want to be sacrilegious and say, well, I'm hearing the Blessed Mother, or I'm hearing God. Because that was, you know, I would never say that. And I said, but I don't know why I'm hearing things. And she says, well, Mary, and she didn't make me feel like a freak.
Right. She was very accepting about this.
She was very open because she knew where I was coming from. I wasn't looking for this. This is something I wasn't looking for. And she knew me probably from when I was in kindergarten. And she was my eighth grade teacher. But they knew that I was an intuitive kid.
To this day, Mary, do you still hear voices of the dead? Do they,
yes.
Do they like disrupt your sleep patterns and things?
Absolutely, George. In fact, if you hear me hoarse, you hear me a little like rough sounding, it's because when I'm sleeping or I try to sleep, I'm actually talking like I'm having a conversation with you right now. This is my whole...
In your sleep?
In my daughter Jacqueline, shared a house with me. And she's an adult, and she had her own apartment and came back. And she says, Ma, I got to get my own apartment again. I said, well, what's the matter? She says, you freak me out. She says, because I'm in my room at the other end of the house, and I'm hearing conversations going on, and I'm hearing, like, two voices. And I'm going, so what maybe the TV was on. She goes, no, I walked in the room. You were sitting up with your eyes wide open talking, and you didn't even know I was there. Like, there was somebody standing right next to you. And you were having conversations going on for like an hour. And I was like, some people like sleepwalking. I do sleep readings.
Sleep readings. I would think this would be a great gift to people.
But you wake up exhausted. There's no sleep.
You don't.
I'm not complaining.
I mean, like tonight after the show, you try to get to bed, but will they keep you awake?
I don't. You know what I say? It's like I'm so used to it. My mother was like that too. My mother never could sleep. And she would sleep with an AM radio, and I remember it always, with the AM radio in her ear, little plug in her ear with the, you know.
I wonder if she'd listen to Coast to Coast in those days.
Oh, she did.
Probably
she used to listen
to Art.
She used to listen to all of that because she could, my mother was very open to reading books about it, listening to the radio, and she could not sleep. I used to tell her, Ma, why don't you just go to sleep? You have to have something in your ear. She says, I have to go or else I hear. I go, what do you hear? She goes, don't worry about it. Go to sleep. And I couldn't sleep either.
Now, you have been called an intuitive explorer of consciousness.
Yes.
On the face of it, that's pretty understandable, but what does it mean to you?
To me, well, Deepak gave me, not just me, he told me about it.
Chopra?
Deepak Chopra, yes.
Okay, cool.
Dr. Chopra. He wrote the foreword to, I think, two of my books.
He's a heavy hitter.
Oh, he's a great man, and I've known him for a long time.
Yeah, he is.
And he was a mentor, and he still is a mentor to me. I was on one of his radio shows. I was a guest on his show every Saturday, and then I had my own for almost 5 years. He had said to me, while we were alive, like we are now with you, George, Mary, psychic medium, he says, you know, that's not all you will do. He says, people think it's just like talking to the dead, and they don't understand that it's energy.
Yeah.
And it's consciousness. And he says, and what you do, you explore, because with the testing that I did with Dr. Gary Swartz and other scientists, they came out with these definitions of me, what they saw in me, medical intuition, past life. I work with Dr. Brian Weiss on past lives. And he says, well, past life, he says, so you, what you're doing is exploring consciousness. You're exploring energy. I went, oh. And he's going, what you are, and people like you, are intuitive explorers of consciousness. He says, that's a Deepak, you know, phrase. I mean, that's how he speaks, you know what I mean? You know that, George. Deepak speaks Deepak. And then, I say that with complete reverence. He says, it's such an intelligent man. But, and I said, oh, he says, and that actually, if people really understood what an intuitive explorer of consciousness is, they wouldn't be so afraid of the word psychic or medium. He said, but many people should be exploring their consciousness, and you have to be, and everybody has intuition. But to be what I do is explore. He would come up to me in the elevator and say, okay, and we'd be alone in the elevator, he'd look at me and go, okay, give me a virtual, Mary, give me a virtual MRI. And that was a virtual, what I would do as a medical intuitive, as a virtual, I'd go, Deepak, you're a doctor. He says, give me a virtual MRI. And I would just look up and down, and when I feel like hot spots and things like that, I would tell him.
Well, you're an energy reader.
Right, yeah. The reading of energy. But he believed in it completely because he worked with me, he'd been around the scientists, and we knew each other for a long time, and he saw the validations. It wasn't just saying things. It was valid and it was live. And it was through science.
Mary, we're going to take a break in a moment, but we'll come back and talk about reincarnation, past lives. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Mary Occhino. She's got a couple books out, including Awakened Instincts, Sign of the Dove, Beyond These Four Walls. Her website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And, she has hosted a live mobile appcast. It's called Mary Occhino's Angels on Call. So we'll have her back. We'll take calls next hour. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back. George Norrie here with Mary Occhino, the world-renowned psychic intuitive medium. Mary, your take on reincarnation. Give me your thoughts on that.
Oh, wow. My take is I totally believe in it, even though brought up not thinking about it. But I always felt, you know, if I look in the mirror, that's what I try to explain when I first came upon a feeling different. And it wasn't just like psychologically. When a lot of people say, you look in the mirror, you don't know who you are. That could be a psychological thing, you know, just don't know who you are at that moment. You're going through things in life.
Yeah.
This is what I used to feel a lot of times when I looked in the mirror. It's like, that's not the person that I see. They actually like would photograph me. And it wasn't until I was about 22, 23 years old that I could actually see who I was, the real Mary. And I was seeing what I realized is a past life. It was a different person, different attire, and it would come back and forth into my in my present day life, it was like a week could go by and I would see myself normally. Like you would see, like take a picture of yourself, you would see where you look presently. And then I look in the mirror again and it would be somebody else. So in my head, it was kind of like, is this another spirit? Is this me? It was me. It was me talking. But then I did, I just lay down one day and I just said, okay, let me just clear my mind and find out who is trying to talk to me. And in my own consciousness, in my subconscious, collective consciousness. And I was brought back, and this is not self-hypnosis or anything else, it was just clearing my mind, brought back in time, just brought back in time. And I saw, and I knew it was me. I knew it was me. I was a man. I had a long beard, and it looked like the days of Nostradamus, but I knew I wasn't Nostradamus. It was in that era.
It was in that same time period?
That time period. And I had this beard, a type of dress, but I knew I wasn't anybody, you know, popular or you know, this great, great psychic. No, I was a doctor and a physician. And I was very callous and cold. And I saw then, I actually saw a whole vision of me, like a day in the life of Henri, because he was French, Henri. And he went to help this young girl whose mother had come to his home and to say that she could not move. She could not move. And he went there and he was telling her, get up, get up, get up. And she looked fine. The day before she was walking, now she couldn't walk. And he was like, the person I was seeing, was very cruel to her and saying to her, it's in your mind, it's in your mind. You can get up, you can get up, you can get up. And she was crying and saying, I can't, I don't know what's wrong. And it dismissed it as like she was a hypochondriac. And what happened? And I said, now I know why I have multiple sclerosis today. Because I had to learn what it was like to be that woman laying in that bed.
It follows you, doesn't it?
It does. And you learn by the lessons, but you can't make it define you.
I mean, if you in another life drowned, would you be afraid of water in this life?
A lot of times, you must be very psychic yourself, George, because I have never been afraid of water for myself. I've been afraid of water for other people. I mean, fanatic about water for like my older brother, Charles. When we were kids, he's 4 years older than me, we were born the same day. Talk about synchronicity, born the same day, 4 years apart. And if he would go near the water, like go with my father, little crabbing off a Rockaway, the pier or whatever, and I'd be standing there, and I'd be so like, I tell my mother, I'm going in the car until he gets away from the pier.
I'm just like you. I cannot relax at a beach or at a pool if there are little kids there, and if their parents aren't watching them, I do.
Right, that was it. But I was a little kid. I was the 4-year-old. He was the 8-year-old, and I was so nervous. My mother would say, "Okay, we gotta go." She's slipping out again. I'd be crying. No, he's going to fall. He's going to fall. He's going to fall. He's going to go in. He never went, never fell. There was no danger. I would be petrified. I mean petrified. And yet I would go in the water. I would swim. I would go on boats, everything. But having come to him, there was no way. No way. No way. And that didn't stop until probably he was 30 years old that it left me. And I believe that he drowned in another life.
Mm-hmm.
And we were family. And that's how we find out about past lives. We usually do, families do come back together, not always as families, but when we have things to connect with each other again, there will be synchronicities in this lifetime to show us, like I said, my brother and myself, born the same day, on election day, 11/8.
You talk about past lives, but you talk about present journeys. What does that mean?
Well, because we've had people want to know what their past life is and be regressed, which I do, without having to hypnotize them or anything, or myself. We have to realize, what did you learn? What am I learning from this? what did I learn? Because this, like when I saw myself.
It's supposed to be lessons learned.
Right. And if I just saw it as, oh, gee, I was a mean, this doctor who was had no bedside manner. And it was, if you didn't have a cast on your arm, he didn't believe you and things like that. So here I come in this lifetime with a physical, you know, was hit with multiple sclerosis. I was in bed for almost 8 years. And if I would allowed and not learned by that past life of how to read myself and to understand and forgive myself and to teach myself, like, oh, this is, that doesn't mean I'm a doctor in this life, but now I was the patient. Now I can choose to stay the patient and lay in bed, or I can work on it and use my intuition to help myself.
Some intuitives, Barry, when I've asked them the question, how many past lives can somebody have, they've said things like thousands. And, you know, I do a little multiplication. I do 1,000 times like 50, you know, assuming they'd live at 50 years. And I'm going, that's a long, long time for all these years.
Well, I've never read anybody who had thousands of lives. I've never seen that. I've never felt that way. Myself, I've picked up about 33 lives. But, you know, a person can come in. Let's say if a person was a miscarriage, right? Because on conception,
mm-hmm.
when this all begins.
Like they died?
Right.
Okay.
Even though there was a miscarriage and they were never, or even a stillborn, has a soul.
Exactly.
And so that's a life, even though it may have not lived to 50 years old. So, yeah, you can have maybe hundreds, but I've never, and I'm not saying that what I say is, you know, the Bible. But I've never seen anybody, I've never felt anybody with more than, I don't know, 60, 70.
Well, and not everybody was a prominent person in that other life either, right?
Yeah, a lot of people think, you know, I get calls when I do readings on past lives. I know I was a definite Cleopatra.
One of our listeners believes to be Cleopatra.
There was only one Cleopatra. There was only one Caesar. There was only one Jesus. I mean, there's only one. How could so many people be that same person? And so it's something, I believe that, you know, the general public and how we think about celebrity today, that we think that a person had, we want to be a celebrity, that's their thought. But it doesn't mean that they weren't similar to that. That could have been a synchronicity of somebody similar to who they were.
Mary, what have you learned dabbling with the other side? What revelation has come to you that you might not have known before?
What do you mean, dabbling?
Well, the fact that you communicate with the other side. What have you learned about that you didn't know before?
That I don't know before. I've always done it, so I don't. That we learn. There is no ending to learning and knowledge. There is no number in. How old you are in this life. People say, well, you're 30. Don't worry about the age. It's you're learning constantly. And I get excited and, like, shocked. And I still do. After all these years of giving readings, I just did a reading that shocked me the other day. Not shocked me because it's not ego, like, oh, Mary, you're so good. Absolutely not. It's because of the synchronicities that come. And the biggest thing I would say to tell anyone out there who thinks about a reading is it has to make sense. If you think if I thought what I'm going to tell you makes sense to me, I would never open my mouth because I don't know who the person is. But I see things like this one woman I was reading, and I don't know nothing. I know nothing about a person. I'll own their name. And they don't only call me about mediumship. They can call me about anything. So I don't assume it's about those who crossed over or past life. It's just whatever comes. And the first thing I picked up was a male came to her side. And that, to me, that's a brother or cousin, but sucks. A male who's close to her peer who had passed over. And he kept showing me the number 29th of a month, the 29th. I said, no, wait, it's a 2 and a 9, 2 and a 9. She goes, oh, my brother passed on February 9th. I says, okay, that, and I go, okay, great. Not great that he's pissed, but that, because that the number 29 means nothing to me. And my brothers are all physically here. And, but that's the beginning. It doesn't make sense, but it comes in. And once you let it in, you get, you stay in that zone. And you don't worry about thinking of what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. It, even if it doesn't sound normal to you in your mind, say it. Say it. It will help a person. It'll teach a person how to communicate with their loved ones and with the universe. The universe is talking to us all the time through synchronicities. Synchronicities are coincidences that are happy things. But they are so around us constantly, constantly.
Mary, what determines the outcome of one's life? Do we pick where we want to go?
Yes.
as a soul? Do we say, you know, that's the couple I want to be with as a kid? Do we do that?
Yes, I believe we do. From before we return, we incarnate or reincarnate, we decide. Even though some people would say, and I totally understand it, why would they decide to have a miserable life if they don't have great parents or they get it?
Right. Who would pick rotten parents?
Right. Who would do that?
Maybe they don't know.
They do.
They do know.
They do know. They don't know exactly, but they know they need to learn a not just learn a lesson because of bad karma on their end, but a lot of times they're there to teach. We're here to teach others.
But why would they pick, you know, a family that, you know, might not be as good as another family?
Because that's a journey they decided to choose. Because of, like I said, maybe they're, a lot of times we're teaching the family that we're going to a lesson that they needed to learn, and we didn't need to learn it.
Is it all about lessons learned?
Lesson learned and lessons given. And it's not always about bad karma. It's not because we've done something wrong all the time. A lot of times it's because we've done something right that we're coming back to help. And it's sometimes you could have been super rich in another life and super poor in this life, but it doesn't mean it always has to be the opposite.
You call yourself also a soul surfer. What is that?
Well, I was just writing, you know, and I was like... I was asked to explain what goes in. All of a sudden, I got a vision of, like I said, I've never been surfing, but it was like going in. Think of a wave, right, which is natural. The waves, the moon, right? The moon with the tides, right? That's all natural,
mm-hmm.
right? The full moon and everything. So I think about our souls just like the moon is. It's part of nature and energy. So I thought about us on like an ocean, and with each wave you go into it very naturally. We can't tell a wave to stop. You can't put your hand up and go, stop, don't come, whether it's a tsunami or a small wave.
They just keep coming.
Just keep coming. And that's how energy is, and that's how communication with souls are. So what I do is like just surf. I allow it to just flow, the energy to flow, and don't say, no, you can't come in.
So you don't try to resist it?
No. Only if I just make sure I have protection.
The old saying, go with the flow, works.
Go with the flow. Absolutely, go with the flow. But if the flow doesn't seem right, walk the other way.
Now, once people pick that family they want to come into, do they ever have second thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. I've thought about that myself. And not because I don't love my family, but you were thinking like, hey, how come I didn't pick a millionaire for a father and mother? Why did I pick, why did I want to get married at 17 years old? And those are things that I would have chosen, although I'm happy I didn't, because I have three beautiful children.
Did you get married at 17?
I did.
Just, well, they did that. A lot of that, you know, the old family customs.
No, it wasn't an old family custom.
It wasn't?
It wasn't.
You
I was the
did.
First one. And there was no one ever expected me to get married at 17.
Were your parents happy for
oh,
you?
No.
They were not.
I was actually married. My father's birthday was July 24th, and I was married for my first marriage.
How old was the husband?
Oh, he was 20.
He was 20 and you were 17.
Yeah. And my father was running the church, in the St. Francis de Chantal Church in Brooklyn. And my father standing up at the pew with me, and he whispered in my ear, "I'll never forget this day." I go, and I left him, "What? Thanks, Dad. Why? You going to remember my anniversary?" He goes, "No, it's the day after my birthday."
I love it.
And I go, "Thanks, Dad." And but he was wonderful, my father, and he is wonderful. But,
hey, hold on, Mary. We're going to hit the top of the hour, but we're going to come back. We'll talk more about your psychic work, and we'll have an hour of phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.